You're listening to OC Talk Radio, Orange County's only community radio station.
Have you ever tasted kiwi fruit? Are you listening to this show from somewhere in the United States? If you've answered yes to those two questions, then you have my featured guest, Karen Kaplan's firm, to thank. Karen's firm, Frieda's, was the company that introduced the kiwi fruit to America in 1964. I've asked Karen to be my featured guest today in order for you, my listening audience, to learn more about the decisions she is making leading a second-generation family business specializing in specialty produce.
You're listening to Orange County's only station with critical business information, Critical Mass, with your host, Rick Franzi.
Welcome to today's episode of Critical Mass, the radio show. I am your host, Rick Franzi. This business talk show airs live on Tuesday and Wednesday afternoons at 4 p.m. So, as a podcast, I would encourage you to listen live during our broadcast times. The goal for this show is to help you, our listening audience, make better decisions. If you want to join in on the conversation today because you're listening live, then find the community chat room on octalkradio.net's radio station website. Log in with your Twitter ID, post your thoughts or questions. Our producer, Paul, is bringing those to my attention, and possibly I'll be able to work one or more of them into the conversation that we have planned today with Karen Kaplan. Karen, it is a great pleasure to have you here on Critical Mass, the radio show. Welcome to our program.
Rick?
You are on the air, Karen. Welcome to Critical Mass, the radio show.
Well, great. I'm glad to be with you.
Great. Why don't we start the show by asking you to talk about your experience and sort of, we know that Frieda's is a family business, but kind of the professional path that you took to kind of end up where you are today at Frieda's.
Well, my professional path was actually very direct. I went to UC Davis, agricultural university, and was there for a year and didn't like it, and left and went somewhere else, went to Mills College, and literally woke up in the middle of the night and realized that my mom's business was very exciting, and I really loved it. I loved the produce. The hours I could deal with, we would go in at 2 o'clock in the morning and work for a very, very long time, and came back to UC Davis, to got a degree in agricultural economics with a specialty in business management, and joined my mom in business in 1977, and that is my entire career path.
I have to ask a personal professional question. Would you recommend UC Davis to students considering the college today?
Well, I think UC Davis is definitely great for some people. I hope all the alums out there that are listening who are Aggies aren't offended by what I have to say. But having had a little more experience with what else is out there, if you really want hands-on experience, not just research, I think there's some other options out there you might want to consider. One of the schools, actually two of the schools that I work with closely, are both the Cal Polys in San Luis Obispo and in Pomona. And the philosophy at Cal Poly, which is part of the Cal State system, is learn by doing. And I find, based on my experience, recent experience at Cal Poly, that the hands-on experience of doing things that happen in the real world really apply more to my business now than the more theoretical approach I got when I was at UC Davis. With that being said, I will tell you that I am actually still in contact with many of my professors, and I graduated from Davis in 1978, so it's been quite a while. I still use them as resources and still go back to visit a couple times a year as I serve on one of their boards. So for some people, that's a great experience. If you want to learn by doing, you might want to take a look at the Cal Polys.
And for those that are listening to the show that may not be in Southern California, who may not be aware of Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo, what an outstanding location, and I think both are good campuses. I've toured both, but San Luis Obispo being nestled where they are, not too far from the ocean, it's not a bad place to spend 4 years for a college education, that would be sure.
No, it's a very beautiful place. I was just there a couple months ago.
All right. Let's talk more about Frieda's. And, you know, I opened the show with the tease talking about what you prominently feature, and we talked about in our pre-interview about kind of how the family business got started, but could you share more details about the history and sort of what the firm has evolved to here over the 50 years that you've been in business?
It's so exciting. Just last night, Rick, before I start that, our local city council here in Los Alamitos, which is right near Long Beach, presented us with a proclamation last night in front of the city council recognizing 50 years in business. And it's a very small, quaint town nestled by the ocean, and it was quite a nice way to start off the week. But Frieda started when my mom needed a job after I was born, and she got a job on the produce market in L.A. with absolutely no strategy in mind. She just needed a job. But if you can think back to 1962 when she got started, there were not very many women in the workforce, unless you were a teacher or a nurse. So here was my mom getting up at 1 o'clock in the morning, driving down the Los Angeles freeways for 30 minutes into downtown L.A., starting work at 2 in the morning when it was very dark and only people selling produce were walking around, and she really stood out. So not only was she the only woman down there, but she was very open-minded. So she took that open-minded, promotion-oriented philosophy and leveraged that into launching a business. And she was actually invited by the landlord of the produce market to start her own business. So she only started by selling California brown mushrooms. Within the first year, of course, like you mentioned earlier, she introduced the Chinese gooseberry, which became the kiwi fruit, to America. And one thing led to another. And that very open-minded philosophy and approach became an open invitation to growers from all over California, all over the United States, and ultimately all over the world to bring new produce items to my mom. So back in the 60s when we started, supermarkets had, on the average, about 65 items in the produce department. So there really wasn't room for a lot of unusual things. Within the next decade, that doubled. It was about 150. And then in the 80s, it was about 250. And then in the 90s, about 350. And now there's probably somewhere between 600 and 1,000 different items in every single produce department that your listeners all over the United States see in their supermarkets. Well, along with that growth in the grocery store produce departments, so grew our company. So we started with kiwi and mushrooms, then we introduced spaghetti squash and shallots and purple potatoes and habanero chili peppers and donut peaches, and the list goes on and on. But what happened is we actually are credited with inventing a category in the produce department. I remember soon after I started in business with my mom in 1977 that the supermarket buyers didn't call the section the specialty produce section of their produce department. They called it the Frieda section because we were literally the only company that sold specialty fruits and vegetables for, gosh, at least 20, 30 years. We really had no competition. But so we invented this category. So we've evolved from just being a buyer and seller of unusual produce to being what's considered the guru, the authority, the people that really can actually advise retailers on what they should have in their stores, how they should market the product, how they should price it, how they should promote it. So we've really evolved from being a very simple vendor to being more of a consultant.
I've been to your website. I'm there right now. I would suggest if people are online, which they must be if they're listening live or maybe at some future point, to type in www.frieda's.com, Frieda's. And you've got such an interesting array of produce that you're bringing to the marketplace. It's got to be, from your perspective, interesting career in business, because you're probably constantly finding interesting new fruits, etc., to bring into the marketplace. Is that true, or am I kind of thinking of something that's not accurate?
Well, it's definitely fun. I mean, food is my passion. I love the produce. Many times when I've given presentations about actual produce, people say, you talk about them like they were your children. You know, here's my passion fruit and here's my cherimoya. So that part is really, really fun. But, you know, it's like most businesses, it's become a lot more data-oriented. So although it's very fun to sell the sizzle and have the passion about the product, you know, like every business, we have to run it by the numbers. So although it's very fun to introduce new items, and we get to do it every once in a while now, it's really more about figuring out what the best items are to be offering to our retail clients and to advise them on which ones they should have in their stores. But on our website, I think there are, over 2,000 pages for sure on our current website. We're going through a revamp, so we'll be relaunching it in October. But we have probably in excess of 600 different fresh and dried fruits, vegetables, and complementary items, things that are sold in the produce department that are what we market, along with the recipes, about 1,800 recipes, and where to find them. You can put in your city or in state, and you can figure out what stores you can find the products in. You know, another part of the website that you don't see is for our clients. We have a password-protected area where the clients can actually go in and download images and all kinds of point-of-sale material.
One question before we take a break, and that is, when I've been to your site and I understand the products that you bring into the marketplace, has the people's awakening to maybe eating healthier diets, I see that not just here in Southern California, but I dare to say across the country. I mean, is that a trend that's benefiting your business? Can you talk about that?
Well, yes, it is. Definitely a trend that, you know, we all know that obesity is a huge problem, that supersizing food and eating fast food probably has not been very good for any of our health. So it's been excellent for the fresh produce business, and in particular for my category of products, the specialty produce category, is it gets kind of boring eating, you know, baby carrots and, you know, salad every day made of just lettuce. So you really want to add something interesting. So what we found is consumers love to find all the exotic and unusual fruits and vegetables that we have because it makes their home diet more interesting. One of the favorite experiences I had when my youngest daughter was in about probably second or third grade is I went to a brownie meeting, which is like junior Girl Scouts, and to get a badge on food, I did a sampling of all kinds of exotic fruits and vegetables. All the moms ahead of time warned me individually that their kids did not like anything weird and that they apologized, that they probably wouldn't participate. You know, and was I sure I really wanted to bring, you know, cucumbers and kiwi fruit and horned melons there? And I said, just trust me on this one. And by the end of the evening, I had not only got all of these 10 or 12 little girls to try all these items, but I had talked about making healthy choices and that they were in charge of their food choices. And the anecdotal information I got afterward was so amazing because moms emailed me within 2 or 3 days telling me now their girls wanted to go grocery shopping, now they wanted to pick their own produce, and they wanted to have at least 5 servings of fresh fruits and vegetables every day. So if we start young, there's a really good chance that we can change eating patterns.
That's a great, and we're going to talk more about that after the break. And the first question I'm going to ask Karen Kaplan to share with you is to talk about her guiding principle that she's using to lead and grow Fridas. And when we come back, we're going to have that conversation. But first, here's a word from a sponsor.
Smart Business Network is a business-to-business multimedia company providing insight, advice, and strategy for C-level executives of fast growth, middle market, and large companies. As one of the nation's largest publishers of local management journals, under the Smart Business name, Smart Business Network publishes 19 regional print editions, presents dozens of large and small-scale business conferences and award programs, and produces a vibrant interactive digital media presence. For more information, visit us at www.sbnonline.com.
Hi, this is Rick Franzi, host of the Critical Mass, the radio show. Welcome to the show. And my guest today is Karen Kaplan. And she's talking to us from her office in Fridas Specialty Produce. Karen, could you share with us the guiding principle that you use to lead your firm?
sure, Rick. I'm looking over the list you sent me of things to choose from, and I'm just like pushing it aside and just tell you what really is in my heart. You know, I've been running my family business. You know, we're celebrating 50 years, so I've been running it since 1986. So I think that's 40 years, whatever it is. And the key lesson I've learned that's caused me to go by this guiding principle is that the company values are the most important thing. And I don't mean the kind of values that people get off the shelf, that where they have values that may not relate to them personally. And what happened at Frida's was my sister Jackie Kaplan Wiggins, who's my business partner, we sat down about two and a half years ago and said, really, what's important to us? This wasn't something that we could decide by taking a vote of all the employees or sitting in a room with post-it notes and everybody writing their ideas and us putting them up on the wall and us bucketing them, which we've done in the past. We said, what was truly important to us? So we distilled what's important to us to four things. And this is truly what guides our business. So it's having real personal values. So the first thing at Frida's that's most important is personal accountability. So that whoever works within our firm really takes it personally what they're responsible for, that they do what they say they're going to do, when they say they're going to do it every single time. Second for us is having a service orientation. And that's a value that we both learned from our mom, Frida, that no matter what, we're going to do whatever it takes to get something done. That whatever we have to do to go the extra mile, that is very important to us, and that's a very important part of our culture. And the last two are principles that we've had for a while, and they come alive every single day. I use these words every single day as I interact with either employees or I interact with clients or suppliers, and that's trust and play fair. On the trust side, there has to be a high level of trust between us and anyone else we interact with. The employees have to trust us, so we have to be vulnerable with them, and we have to trust them. And then, of course, playing fair, I just cannot tell you how many times a day I say to myself, so what's the fair thing to do? Whether it's negotiating a price with a supplier, making an arrangement with a customer, dealing with an employee, or just philosophically having to make a decision. And by having those values that are really true to us and are what we stand for, that has become a fantastic guiding principle for us.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And in that answer, you also brought up something that I'd ask you to maybe comment on. I'm going to ask you about the 10 keys to success in a couple minutes. But you and your sister are now leading the firm. Could you just share with us, from your experience, how are you two making that a successful partnership, both in the business, making it work?
How do we make it a successful partnership? Well, it kind of gets into the 10 keys because that's kind of what we do. But really, we trust each other. My mom says that we're the yin and the yang, that she's the left brain and I'm the right brain. So together she has one complete daughter. Okay, so we are not alike in very many ways, other than we're female and we're moms. So we have such a high level of trust, we split the duties. And when I need to be called on the carpet, when there's something that I'm really not doing great at, she calls me on it. We have complete honesty with each other. So there's no ego involved. But ultimately, because I have a majority ownership, just by a little, ultimately I have to make the decisions. And we have such a high level of trust that when I make a decision, I'm not usually making an unpopular decision. I'm making a well-thought-out, well-discussed decision. And I know many family businesses, when you have siblings running a company, I've heard horror stories of families that have been split apart because siblings couldn't work together. There was not a high level of trust. One of them, or maybe their spouses, got greedy. And we just don't have that. Probably one of the things that we do best is our spouses are not involved in our business, so it's just me and my sister. And we don't typically take the business outside the work environment. So when we're at home, we're really being sisters. And when we're at work, we're being business partners.
Great. And hopefully I didn't co-opt too much of what we're going to talk about in a couple minutes, which are the 10 keys to success as a family business. One question before the next break. I know that you are an active participant in CEO peer groups, and you have been for some time. Could you share with our audience, from your perspective, how has that membership benefited you and the quality of the decisions that you make at Fritas?
Am I allowed to say what CEO group I'm in?
Sure, please do.
Okay, well, I'm in a group called Vistage, V-I-S-T-A-G-E, formerly called Tech. And it's an international CEO organization. I think there's 16, 18,000 CEOs around the world that are members, and we meet once a month. So my group, it's about a group of 15. They're based north of here up in Culver City. So I sit around once a month and talk with fellow CEOs who are not at all involved in my business. So the benefit of that has been... First of all, the realization that every company owner or manager has the exact same problems that every other company owner or manager has. We all think that we have our own problems. They're unique. No one's ever experienced this. And the thing I've learned is everyone's experiencing the same problems that I am, same challenges to some degree. So for me, I can step outside my business once a month. I go on the first or second Tuesday of the month. I sit down, and we are encouraged to bring real business issues to the table. And we can prepare them formally. We can prepare them informally. But I have had such incredible, honest insight from these fellow CEOs that truly it's invaluable to me. But probably as a CEO, the part of it that's the best is they're painfully honest. And when you're the president or CEO of a company, what I find the biggest challenge you face day to day is everybody's a yes man or a yes woman. You know, they don't want to piss you off. They don't want to say you're wrong. So what do? They just say, yes, Karen. Oh, yes, Karen. That's a great idea, Karen. They don't want anything to go wrong. And they're not always honest with you. So when I go to my CEO group, you know, they call BS, BS. And they raise questions that no one else would raise. They ask the very, very difficult questions. And they don't have any, there's no ego hanging on it. It's not going to affect their job tomorrow. So they're painfully honest. And I will tell you, although this is my third Vistage group that I've been on in the last 12 or 13 years, I've kind of moved around till I found a good home, that... I don't think I could live without it, because it's kind of a way to get away from work but yet be in the business.
That's a very succinct and thoughtful response, and I think you probably, in your answer, I hear a number of the powers that I write, Critical Mass, the 10 Explosive Powers of CEO Peer Groups, and I'm glad that you were willing to share with us that experience, and it's good for me to see, as an advocate of CEO Peer Groups, that people look on this radio show are active members. I believe that process can benefit all business owners and entrepreneurs if they come with the mentality that in the outlook that I hear you say, and they get a lot of value from it. So
if I could just inject just for a moment, I think the key to getting the most out of a peer group is you have to be honest. You have to be willing to be vulnerable. You have to bring real issues. You have to share your financials. If you're just going to show up and be shallow, it's not worth the time or the money, because you won't get anything out of it, and either will your fellow CEOs. So you have to be vulnerable, willing to be vulnerable. And I think that's difficult for some people. Frankly, that's the reason I left my second group, was because I did not feel that all the other members were willing to be vulnerable.
I couldn't agree with you more or say it any differently that would be better. So thank you for that, making that point, Karen. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, then I'm going to ask Karen to talk about 10 keys to success as a family business. But first, here's a commercial break.
If you are an Orange County business executive, this message is for you. Do you ever feel isolated with no place to turn for advice or feedback? Who holds you accountable to your commitments in your company? Where do you find the right resources to help you and your company grow? If you have these questions, then Critical Mass for Business might be the answer for you. Critical Mass for Business is committed to helping you make better decisions. These are groups of peers running businesses just like you, providing a great sounding board to test ideas and concepts, review plans and goals, and present issues and opportunities for discussion. The result is improved strategy, accountability, people, and execution skills. If you are interested in learning more, go to www.criticalmassforbusiness.com and learn more about our executive peer group.
Welcome back to this installment of Critical Mass, the radio show. This is your host, Rick Franzi. It's a pleasure to have Karen Kaplan of Frida's on the show today. If you're listening live and you'd like to post a thought on our community chat room, then find that page on octalkradio.net's website. Log in, post your thoughts. Paul's bringing some to my attention. I will possibly work them into the conversation, but we have just chock full of questions here for Karen Kaplan. And as I said before the break, we were going to ask her to share with us her 10 keys to success as a family business. Karen?
Well, thanks, Rick. I'll try to get through them quickly because it sounds like you have a few questions. But I was asked a couple months ago to speak at a fresh produce industry event, and typically when you do that, you're going to talk about produce or what's happening in your company. But I thought about it and realized that so many people in the audience were parts of family business. And the word I had heard, you know, everywhere I travel is, how are you and your sister so successful? And what are you doing now that your daughter, my oldest daughter, by the way, is graduating from college this Saturday, but what are you going to do as your daughter wants to come into the business? So how can you be how and why are you successful in a family business? So I put together, a la David Letterman, my top 10 keys to success. So number one, and if you want, I can email this to you and you can post it on your website or we'll put it on our website. But number
That's
one, there
idea.
Can only be one boss. And I mentioned that my sister and I are co-owners of the company. We do not have the same number of shares. I own 55%. She owns 45%. And that's because we saw in another produce company where there were two brothers that were co-CEOs of the company. And they disagreed strategically on how the business should expand. And they ended up splitting up their family. So after we saw that happen, because they just went different ways, we said, you know what, there can only be one boss in a family. Someone has to make the decisions. So it was not a difficult decision for my parents when they were kind of mapping the way for our family leadership, our family business leadership, to have there be one boss, and it happened to be me. So number two is don't rely on birth order. Now, I'm the oldest, but I didn't get to be president because I was the oldest. I earned my way. I was early on in the business and very involved. But I think when people look in family businesses, it's very tempting to assume that the oldest sibling is the person that should be running the business. And I think it's really more important to consider who has the right leadership qualities and the right vision. Actually, a new friend of mine owns a very well-known family business, King's Hawaiian Bread. And Mark, who is the president, is actually the middle child of five children. He's number three. And he was chosen to be president of a huge family business because of his values. He told me, we were away on a retreat a couple weekends ago, that because his father and mother thought that he had the right values and that he was fair, that he would be the right sibling to run the business. So number two is don't rely on birth order. Number three key to success is the boss does not have to be a family member. I think more and more family businesses are realizing that they may not have talent in a business. Although a family business is defined as one or two or more members of a family in positions of power, that position of power may not be the one running the company. So it seems to be more and more acceptable to have a non-family member running the company if that's the best strategy for the company. And there was a time when I had a general manager working for me that was not a family member, and that worked great for a period of time. So I think you should be open to that. So number four is about the next generation. I have a 21-year-old daughter that is wanting to come into the family business. So number four is make the next generation work elsewhere. And my challenge in the next 2 weeks is I haven't told her that number four yet. She thinks she's going to come work for the family business right away. And although she's going to work for a summer, it is a requirement in our family business that you go work elsewhere. For 2 years, you have to work outside our family business. For any of Jackie's and my kids that want to come into the business, that the experience you get working in the real world with the hierarchy in a business, the politics in the business, the responsibilities in someone else's business are very, very important. And I think both my sister Jackie and I are a little bit of a disadvantage because we have not had significant jobs elsewhere. We did work right out of college, but it was a pretty low-level job. So number four is make the next generation work elsewhere. Number five is make the next generation do real work. I think it's tempting when you have the daughter or son of a company owner to come to the business to just make them feel good and give them busy work, maybe do filing or answer the phones and be the receptionist. I think it's very important when the next generation, if it's the second or the third or the fourth generation, is that they actually do real things. I can tell you with my daughter, when she comes to work here this summer, she will actually be working in the commercial part of our business. I'm not going to have her work in some of the soft sides like marketing or accounting or HR. She's going to be involved in sales because I think that she has to do real work and see the way that our company makes money. Number six is don't let them work directly for you. I remember working directly for my mom and how difficult it was for her and for me because you don't want to play favorites and you don't want other people in your company to think you're playing favorites. So every time my daughter or my nephew has come to work here, they have not worked directly for their parent. I think it's very, very important to have them work under someone else. The challenge, of course, to those of us who are business owners is you have to have a manager or supervisor that you know is going to treat the next generation like a regular employee. And that's quite a challenge. Number seven, and it should be number 7, 8, 9, and 10, is number seven, is coach the next generation about confidentiality. When my daughter first came to work here, she would come home and she would relay information to me. And, of course, I talked a little bit about the day. And I would have to remind her that what I told her, what she heard around the dinner table, was not something she could repeat at work or repeat to any of her coworkers. So it's very important that they learn early on to maintain confidentiality. What goes on at the dinner table has to stay at the dinner table. And also they need to know that they are going to have things said to them that are really meant for you. People know that the children or relatives of the owners of the company are all ears and that they're going to repeat whatever information, whatever anecdotal information they hear right back up to their parents. So people feel like they have like a direct line to the boss. So you have to coach your next generation employees on that whole confidentiality expectation. So number eight is get rid of the bag of wrenches. And I don't see it a lot in my business, but I know in a lot of father and son businesses, the son comes into the business and has a great idea. They've just come out of college. They've learned the new technique. They come in the business and they walk into their dad's office and they say, "Dad, I've got this great idea." And this is, you know, not literally, but the dad reaches under the desk and pulls out a wrench. You know, he throws a wrench into his son's ideas. He doesn't let his son run with the idea and make a mistake. And the big credit I give my mom, and I think it may be as a woman business owner, she was a little bit more nurturing, but when I had a great idea, or I had a failure, instead of saying, I told you so, she would say, oh my God, you lost money on the rhubarb. Oh, let me tell you what happened to me when I imported ginger root. Of course, the examples are fresh produce, but the idea of not throwing your kid under the bus when they have an idea or when they make a mistake is a really important one. And you have to allow them to make mistakes. Number 9 is keep the family and the business separate. I think the key in our family to our success is, as I mentioned earlier, when we're at work, the family members, my mom, my sister, and myself, we're pretty much all business. And when we walk away from the business and we're at home, we deal with family matters. And that really has made it easier not only on us, but of course on all of our employees. They don't have to hear the family bickering going on. And then number 10, Rick, is hire the best people for every position, even if it's not a family member. I think I've not come across it here in our business, but sometimes there isn't room for every member of the family who wants to work in the family business. And sometimes the best person for the job, for a management position, anywhere in the company, is not a member of the family. I think the best thing a family business owner can do is realize that the business has to come first. It is not just a guaranteed place of employment for other members of the family. And I have seen and heard of other businesses in Southern California. I have a good friend who's told me horror stories where the parents made room for every one of the siblings of the kids in the business, and it almost put them out of business.
And as the generations go on, it can actually become even more of a challenge to find places for not only the children, but now the grandchildren, and then the great-grandchildren. So I would like to ask, Karen, that you give me a soft copy, a PDF that I can link on my blog, etc. And I think so many of our guests are family businesses here on Critical Mass, the radio show. I would love to share that with the Critical Mass business community. And thanks for taking us through that here on the radio show today.
No problem.
We're going to take our final break for the show. And when we come back, we're going to ask Karen Kaplan to share with you, the listening audience, a current challenge that's facing her business and the ideas and plans that she has begun to implement or will be implementing in an attempt to mitigate this challenge. So we'll be back in a minute, but here's a message from our sponsor.
When you use the Premier Rewards Gold Card from American Express, the rewards points can keep on multiplying. By 3 with triple points on airfare, by 2 with double points on gas and groceries, and a single point for pretty much every other dollar you spend on the card. Then, start choosing from over a million rewards to redeem all those points. Apply today and the annual fee for the first year is on us. Call 1-800-AXP-GOLD or visit axpgold.com. The annual fee for the card is $175. See terms, conditions, and restrictions at axpgold.com.
Okay, we're back to Critical Mass, the radio show. I am your host, Rick Franzi. My guest today, Karen Kaplan of Fridas. And we've asked her before the break to talk about a challenge. Karen, would you care to share our current challenge facing the business?
Sure. I think besides the economy, which I think everyone has had a huge challenge with, the biggest challenge, well, let me first define who my market is. Okay. About 90% of my business is we sell exotic and specialty produce to supermarkets across the United States, to a little bit into Canada, a little bit of export, but it's primarily American retailers. So the biggest challenge we faced, and you see it in the paper pretty frequently, is that most of the big retailers are either consolidating, they're being bought by other companies, they are restructuring, or they're being faced with challenges. So we have, you know, all the big corporates, all the big multinationals that we do business with and all the regional chains, is they're all kind of in a bit of a turmoil. And that's a huge challenge for our business because, you know, we sell kind of an optional item. You know, it's you don't have to have 600 specialty items in your produce department. So I say the biggest challenge, and I think I shared this with you, Rick, when you were here, is I paraphrased this from one of my absolute favorite movies, and that was The American President. When Michael Douglas said, I was so busy keeping my job, I forgot to do my job. And that's the biggest challenge we face, I feel we face, is our clients, because their companies, the retail buyers, because their companies are in such a state of turmoil that they're so busy keeping their jobs, they're not doing their jobs. So the challenge to us was, how are we going to continue to grow our business when most of our clients are just trying to hang on to their jobs? Okay? So we actually took a look strategically at how we were approaching our clients, and it was very buy-sell. And I would imagine most of the listeners who are tuned in right now have had a taste of this kind of thing, where your clients are distracted all the time. So we took a completely different approach, and that was, we thought, with 50 years experience of selling specialty produce, that we really had the data. We really had the information our clients needed to be successful, and that no one could imitate us. We actually realized this is our competitive advantage, is that we knew more about the specialty produce category than not only any of the other suppliers out there, but than our clients do. So the way we're dealing with it is, we decided to take a more strategic approach to selling, more of a consultative approach. So actually, for the last 2.5, almost 3 years, we have changed the way we do business, in that we are kind of consultants to our clients. So instead of going in and just saying, how many kiwis do you want, we go in after having visited their stores and tell them what tropical fruits they should have in their stores, how they should merchandise them, how they should market them, how they should price them, seasonally, when they should be in and out with the product. And what we found, because our category is so small compared to the whole produce department, we probably are 1% at best of our retail client, produce clients' business, that they are thrilled, absolutely thrilled, to have the answers, because they don't have time to analyze and know the data about our products. And like almost every business, it's all data-oriented. So they're looking at how to optimize their Apple displays and what color grapes they should have and how many facings of bagged lettuce they should have. They really don't care a lot or know a lot about Asian pears or shallots or pearl onions or sun-dried tomatoes. So we've taken the approach that we come in and we actually consult for them. And, of course, they get the consulting by buying our products. And what's interesting is, and we're very true, this is very much about our values, is we only make recommendations that are good for our clients. The strategy is not about how we sell more produce. We go into a client and we may tell them we're the wrong vendor for you. We may tell them you need to take out some of our products. You don't need them in your stores. They're contributing to your waste. So we only make recommendations that are in the best interest of the client. And it's working.
So you really are addressing an unmet need, but one that the client probably wasn't even aware you were able to solve for them. Because I'm sure by changing the nature of your relationship over the past few years to this value-added service, I guess I don't want to answer the question for you, so let me ask you, Karen. Have you noticed, how has this changed the relationship that you have with your clients?
Well, it's changed the dynamics, because pretty much almost all suppliers that go in there are, you know, hawking some kind of product, right? They've got the latest, greatest strawberry or whatever. So we've had to train the clients. Because they're not used to someone coming in and saying, we used to go into a client and they'd say, give us your list and tell us your prices. And we say, we don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. And they go, well, how are we going to do business? We say, well, we'd rather get to know your business better. We'd like to get to know your pain points, what's really keeping you up at night, and let's see if there's some value for what we have to offer. And then let's see if we can offer you some recommendations, which, of course, you know, we would expect you to do business with us with that. So it's really changed the dynamics. And I will tell you, you know, for the benefit of the listeners, that if you don't have an advocate at the client, if they don't have someone there that is going to push and promote for what you stand for, it's probably not going to be a great relationship. So we found with certain clients, you know, we have all the clients analyzed and ranked, is some clients don't get all of our services because they don't have that internal advocate. There has to be someone on the client side that believes in what we stand for and what we can do for them that kind of promotes Frieda's.
This is an interesting avenue of conversation that I'm going to say, Karen, that I appreciate what you've told us today, and that's really helpful. And maybe at some point in the future, I'd like to offer you the opportunity to come back on to Critical Mass, the radio show, so that I could kind of go a little deeper in this area, because I think what you're doing is a learning moment, a teachable moment for the audience that could be, as you said earlier about your peer group experience, this could be applicable to a lot of other businesses who aren't in business for 50 years, who aren't in your niche, but yet could use this strategy maybe to create a different nature of relationship with their clients and certainly differentiate themselves from their competitors.
Well, thank you. Can I be shameless just for a minute?
Yes.
Okay. So you know, Rick, because I told you that I write a blog. Okay? And I decided a year and a half ago that the CEO of a company should have a voice that's independent from the company. So I launched my blog, and I just want to just share the name of it with the listeners, because I talk a lot about business philosophy in my blog. Now, I only post twice a week. I think I told you this. I try not to be annoying. But everyone who follows my blog pretty much says the same thing. They feel like I'm in their head. And there are business owners, there are consumers, there are just a wide variety of people that follow my blog. But I talk about half the time about produce, like once a week, some story about produce. But the other time a week, I talk about something usually related to a business learning. And I think sometimes, even though we are all so pressed for time, that sometimes to get that little learning, that sharing of learning, is sometimes helpful. So my blog is called What's on Karen's Plate, and actually if you Google it, What's on Karen's Plate, it will come up. It's posted by Blogspot. But your listeners, your viewers might just want to just take a look at it, you know, what the current issue or two is, to get an idea of how my thought process works.
And I gave your website earlier, but could you, again, give them your website address as well?
Well, sure. We're on the web, so it's Frieda's.com. That's F-R-I-E-D, as in dog, A-S.com. That's my mom's name, Frieda. Also, like many companies, but I think that we're doing some really different things, we are on Facebook. It's Frieda's Specialty Produce on Facebook. The company's on Twitter, which is Frieda's Produce. But then I think the CEO has to have an independent voice. So actually, I have my own handle on Twitter. I'm Karen_Kiwi, so Karen_Kiwi. And I tweet about various things going on, whether it's in business, whatever I'm doing, talking about produce. We had a little knockdown, drag-out fight in the sales department yesterday. It was kind of exciting. But that voice, I think that CEO voice is very important, and I hope you can tell how passionate I am, Rick, not only about the produce but about business. But I hope if I could impart to the people listening how important it is not to be tied down just to the day-to-day, but to be a thought leader and not be afraid to interact with your clients and your customers, I think that's just key to success.
You know, I could not agree with you more. We had that conversation at one of our peer groups that we had this morning, talking with our members about how important it is for them to have a voice in the marketplace. And I'm on What's on Karen's Plate right now. And so, Karen Kaplan, I want to thank you for the time you've put in here today, being our guest on Critical Mass, the radio show. Thanks for being a friend of the show, and welcome to the Critical Mass business community.
Thanks, Rick.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I think we covered a lot of ground and quite a number of teachable moments in the conversation with Karen Kaplan. I would suggest that you check back. We will get from Karen her 10 keys and post them on our social media sites as well to help give you that information on a, you know, in an online version. And I hope that you enjoyed today's show, and information that Karen shared helps you to make better decisions. I would like to thank Smart Business Magazine for sponsoring our radio show today. Smart Business Magazine is a management journal that provides insight and advice for mid-market business owners and CEOs. Visit their website if you're interested, www.sbnonline.com. If you're interested in learning more about Critical Mass for Business, then visit our website, which is www.criticalmassforbusiness.com. This is Rick Franzi saying, until the next show, I hope all your decisions move your company in a positive direction.
You've been listening to Critical Mass, the radio show, only on OCTalkRadio.net.